This is Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna, on your flagship station of the Jacksonville Jaguars. News Talk Radio WOKV. To join Brian Sexton, Jeff Lagerman, and Vic Ketchman, dial 355-NFL1. That's 355-6351. Outside the Jacksonville calling area, dial 1-800-355-NFL1. Jaguars This Week is brought to you in part by Prudential Network Realty, Ticket Exchange, and by the Jacksonville Transportation Group. Now, here's the voice of the Jaguars, Brian Sexton.
Good evening and welcome to Jaguars This Week. A little somber news, obviously, leading into our program this evening. The story of Summer Thompson is one that we're all following this afternoon. Rest assured that as any news breaks on this issue, the news team over at WOKV will interrupt our program and bring that news to you. We're going to go ahead with football here for a little while this evening, but all of us in this room thinking about the Thompson family and the little girl as well. 355-NFL1, the phone number if you'd like to join us on the program, 355-6351. Jaguars to the bye week. The most often asked question, is it a good time for the bye week?
Not really.
Really? And it's interesting you say that because Jack Del Rio said it's always a good time for a bye week.
No, it's with Tennessee coming off a 59-0 job, I would rather have not given them 2 weeks to recover and start anew and all that. This team was hot and it was healthy, and I would have preferred to keep playing.
I agree. I mean, you look at the shape that Tennessee is in. I mean, they've got massive injuries in their secondary. And
they might not be ready this week, but they could be ready next.
Yeah, they're getting recovery.
They're
going
to get closer. I mean, either way, I mean, they could get a couple guys back. But, I mean, gosh, you'd like to take your division rival and put it to them again. Put them worse in the dumps, you know. I mean, it would have been great.
Since you start there, did you see any of that game?
Yeah.
I mean, it was off television locally. By, you know, early first drive of the third quarter, they had switched to the Jets and the Bills game. But if you saw it, was it Tom being that good? The Titans being that bad, a blend of both. I mean,
well,
what was it?
Man, when you get 59-0, you got to have a little bit of everything.
Well, that's another one of those cases where everything has to go right for one team and wrong
you
for the other.
You know what Sammy Boss said about 59-0, don't you?
No, what'd he say?
You remember your game plan? Don't.
Yeah, right. For a guy from Pittsburgh, you do the West Texas twang really
your
well.
Game
you know
plan
that?
Don't account for no damn 59-0.
I had actually. I guess it was.
You're right about that, Ted.
Monday night, while I'm watching Monday Night Football, which was a tremendous game.
It was.
Between
Chargers
and Broncos. And it was, I mean, boy, that game had everything. And I'm sitting there at halftime and commercial breaks. I had actually watched the Jeff Fisher 30-minute long press conference that he had in Nashville on Monday. Whew. Man. I mean, talk about. You know, never seeing Jeff Fisher, you know, in that kind of a position.
Sweat. What do you think of what he did yesterday when he went to the podium, introduced Tony Dungy, and had the Peyton Manning jersey on?
Hey, look, at some point you got to be able to laugh.
I thought so, too.
You know, I couldn't agree more.
I thought so, too.
It's football.
Yeah.
Okay? This is not life and death. It was a charity fundraiser. And I think more of Jeff Fisher for having some, you know, some humor to him.
If I was Fisher, sometime this week in a press conference situation, I would apologize to the terrible towel.
Right, because they've lost 8 in a row since.
They haven't won since. You know, I mean, just to break the mood, just to lighten the mood. I mean, just anything because, I mean, that is the baton death march.
Oh, yeah. 2 weeks now to look at. You remember how people felt here about 41-0. 59's a whole
45-0 at halftime.
Yeah.
45.
Felt like I was watching Bulls football play again.
Yeah, it was really out of control.
You know, I got the most interesting email from a gentleman. He didn't give the last name, but he is apparently a videographer, a cameraman for one of the local television stations. He sent this to me to ask Vic. I'm going to run it tomorrow. I think it's going to make it in. He did his work here on Sunday. And then he went back to the station after the game, and he said that what network would have had the game? CBS?
CBS would have.
When CBS pulled it because it was such a bad game, the station was flooded with phone calls from people who wanted the game put back on because they wanted to see snow.
It was a great visual.
Fantastic. Nothing spikes ratings like snow.
Oh, yeah. It was a great game to watch. I mean, because of the snow.
Yeah.
And because Tom Brady and his crew put on an absolute clinic.
Do you know what I like the most about Jeff Fisher? Today, he was asked about it again, and he said, look, if I hurt your feelings, I'm sorry. You should have a little bit thicker skin. God knows I need to have it right now. But the thing that he said was, I'd do it all over again. He was just trying to have fun.
Mm-hmm.
And when things are that
bad.
Yeah,
why would somebody have a problem with that?
Well, and I would think, you know, Peyton Manning's like Tim Tebow in Tennessee. You know, I mean, I would have thought people would have at least laughed and appreciated the fact that it's Peyton Manning. It wasn't like he was wearing Tom Brady's jersey. We'll take a break. We're a little bit behind here. We will have updates on the Summer Thompson situation throughout our broadcast here this evening, but we'll break now. You're listening to Jaguars This Week on News Talk Radio, WOKV, depend on it.
To talk to Brian, Jeff, and Vic, dial 355-NFL-1 or 1-800-355-NFL-1. Now, back to Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna on News Talk Radio, WOKV.
Welcome back. Jaguars This Week continues here on News Talk Radio, WOKV. Jaguars to their bye week. They take on the Titans a week from Sunday. And, of course, you'll hear all the action right here on News Talk Radio, WOKV. Del Rio worked the boys today, works them tomorrow, and then heads out of town.
Yeah, this is they're 2-4 under Jack after in games immediately after the bye week. Jaguars are 7-7 overall in their history. It's not as though this team has made a living on post bye week games. I'd love to know what the national or what the NFL average is for that. I mean, do teams generally do better after the bye week or before? I'd love to. I
don't know it. I mean, I looked at the numbers last night too. So
I'd have to think that it's right at 50-50.
Well, I wanted to ask Jack about it, and I said, look, 2-4 coming out of the bye week. How do you prepare to start quicker? He goes, well, I guess you could look at it that way. Well, it's a record. He didn't want to go there with me last night. I don't know why, so let me ask you the same question. As a coach, how do you give your players the maximum amount of time to rest, because that's what the week is for, and still not go sluggish to Tennessee?
I mean, I think it's a matter of getting the tempo back, you know, because that's what teams lose a lot in the bye week is tempo.
Yeah, but you see, this is a unique situation. You got two teams coming off a bye week going against each other. Usually you don't get that.
He did say that. He said he thought that evened the playing field a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
My question is now, what are you going to get from a team that's been wounded 59-0 for 2 weeks?
I mean, everything they got.
You know what you're going to get in the woods. If
everything
you've
got they got.
You got a wild pig cornered.
Everything they've got.
Yeah.
They're going to have 2 weeks to sit there and chew on their 0-4 record. And
there's enough talent on that team.
2 weeks of hearing about it, 2 weeks of people beating them up about it. And if this were a game in which they were coming here, you know, I think it would create less pressure for them to perform. But, I mean, when that game's back in Nashville, this team better get ready, because that's going to be a playoff-type atmosphere for the team on the other side.
I don't know whether or not that stadium will be full. That in and of itself will be interesting. But every ticket sold up there, so you could have a wild crowd.
Now, they'll have lots of no-shows. 0-6 will produce no-shows in the very, very best of football towns. But that the tickets are sold. They're sold for the season. Right. So
well,
you
that's
know,
what I mean. I mean, you could.
Here's what you're going to get. Here's the first thing you're going to get. A new quarterback. Wouldn't you think that's almost a certainty? Really?
I don't see it. I really don't. I don't see them putting Vince Young in the lineup. I hope they do. I mean, I really do, because Vince Young is not the quarterback that Kerry Collins is. Not that Kerry Collins has been great. But I'm going to tell you, from watching some of the game tapes of the Tennessee Titans, because there's been a lot of common opponents so far, so I've had a chance to watch quite a bit of the Tennessee Titans, more so than I think in years past. He ain't getting any help now. I'm talking about his receiving core.
45 points in the first half was not the result of what anything Kerry Collins did.
No.
It was the defense.
He's not getting a whole lot. Hey, and the simple fact is that what did we talk about when Tennessee came here the first time? And that was that the reason Tennessee was 0-4 at that time was it's a team that's not built to play from behind. I mean, that's just not
what
they are.
That's right.
You know, and Tennessee, just like Jacksonville, and I don't have their maybe you can pull it up, Brian, their schedule and who they've played so far. But they have played, much like the Jaguars have so far, they have played Peyton Manning, Tom Brady, Matt Schaub, and the Houston Texans.
Mark Sanchez,
who was playing well at that time. They have played some hot quarterbacks with a defense that has lacked starters in the secondary. Mm-hmm. And when they give up some quick points, all of a sudden, Kerry Collins and that offense has to do something that they're not accustomed to doing, and that's playing from behind.
I talked to someone in Tennessee this week, and it has not been publicly stated that Vince Young will be the starting quarterback, but they're leaning towards it for this reason. Next year, Vince Young is due a bonus, and they want to know what they've got because essentially they know what they've got in Kerry Collins. They need to figure out real quick, can Vince Young rebound and develop, or do we have to dump them both next year and bring someone else in?
They know what they got with Vince Young.
No, they have to start over next year, and it's going to be a good time to start over because it's going to be a great quarterback crop in the draft.
355 NFL 1. We're due for news here at the bottom of the hour. An update on the Summer Thompson situation is next here on News Talk Radio WOKV. Depend on it.
To talk to Brian, Jeff, and Vic, dial 355-NFL-1 or 1-800-355-NFL-1. Now, back to Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna on News Talk Radio WOKV.
You know what I think the worst job in pro football is right now?
Jeff Fisher's.
No. No, Jim Zorn's.
Oh, yeah, by far.
I mean, how could that situation get so bad in Washington that one of the premier, the heritage franchises in the NFL has become a laughingstock?
You talk about no-shows. The Redskins supposedly had in excess of 20,000 this past week, the same week that they named, was it Sherman Lewis, consultant.
That means they had 70,000 in attendance.
You're right, but I mean, you know how that place is now.
Yeah, 92,000. I mean, and the prices they charge. Have either of you seen John Riggins' video?
I have read his comments, but not seen the video.
I've heard of it.
Well,
he's a special man.
Oh yeah, he is. I really like him. Riggo44.com, I think, is his website, and it's an interesting concept. I've considered the possibility that I may do this when I retire, which is
Riggo44.com.
Sit in front of a pile of logs every week and rip people. He did a job on his old team, the Washington Redskins. Oh,
he was right on the money.
Oh man, did he kill Vinny Serrato and the owner and Jim Zorn? And it's just
did anything he say and was
no.
Was,
he's right on the button.
Yeah, right on the money.
But go after the owner hardest. He's the guy who fired Marty Schottenheimer. Schottenheimer had them in a wonderful position where they rallied from an 0-5 start to nearly make the playoffs. And it was, you know, the arrow was pointing up for them, but that wasn't good enough for Schneider. Oh, no, he's got to have it, and he's got to have it now. Well, he hasn't had it, and he hasn't had it ever.
That's it's a shame that
that too.
Redskins fans have to deal with that situation. Jaguar
it really
fans,
is.
You have no idea how fortunate they are. By the way, did you see last night ESPN's special on the UFL? The USFL?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I taped it. I haven't seen it.
It was very good.
Yeah.
I was very entertained.
Memories.
Yeah. Did you see the teams playing in the Los Angeles Coliseum with, 7,000 or 8,000 people in there?
Yeah.
Reminded me of every game that I've ever played in L.A.
L.A. Express.
Whether it had been against the Raiders or against the Rams, it was the same way when the NFL was there.
Mm-hmm.
That's a whole other topic we could
go
down.
I know. I just wanted to make mention of that.
You had a rough Monday night with that.
Oh, no. I'm not going there. No.
No. We've got
everything's
callers.
Great.
Let's take some calls.
Everything is great.
We got callers
great.
And great none
ticket
of them
sales,
are about tickets.
Great ticket sales.
Although, real quick, you mentioned all the empty seats in Washington. They had about 15,000 empty seats in Tampa across the way last weekend, too. I say that because of a very good friend. Who has season tickets, who was there, and he said, easy, 15 grand.
Here's what I have to say on the Tampa Bay situation. When Raheem Morris was hired as head coach, he had made the comment that he learned a lot of what he learned about football he got from video games. So I had immediately people because because I'm very hard on.
I saw you put that in your power rankings, by the way.
Yeah, well, I had to take a shot.
That was a shot.
Well, that's a shot.
It was a good shot.
Well, I guess that tells us, what is he, 0-6?
Yes.
I guess that tells you all we need to know about video games. Well, if you hire a coach who cut his teeth on video games, you deserve to be 0-6.
Let's grab some phone calls here. Rick is up the road in Fernandina Beach. Hello, Rick.
Well, hello, gentlemen. How are y'all doing today?
Good.
Well, first off, I'm not going to take Vic to task for dropping the Gators to number 5, and we'll just move on beyond that. However, that is just a huge giggle at the office. We all get a tremendous kick out of it. And
Arkansas got a big kick out of the officiating on Saturday.
Well, it did. And the other part that, just to be very brief, I'm very much upset that it's turned into a criminal investigation with Summer Thompson from a search and rescue, and we'll just drop it at that because that's, the worst possible news we can have. And and going forward, I'm very excited about our team. I really am. I see the arrow pointing up. On top of that, I see the fact that the team is beginning to gel together. I'm impressed by some of the things I'm seeing out of Reggie Nelson that I haven't seen otherwise. Gene was so right about Derek Cox. This is this year's second-round pick, not next year's second-round pick. And there are a lot of things that are looking very good. But to go back to a lot of things that you said, Logs, and something that you wrote that's very important, Vic, is that, folks, we have got to stop putting the P ahead of the R because we are still rebuilding. And the thing that we should all be excited about is that the fact that the team is looking better, we're going forward, but we're still rebuilding. And the thing that really just juices me up is to think what we're going to do in the draft next year, because we've got a couple of years before we're up there. But this is where the team has needed to be for years. And if they think it's exciting this year, about week 10 of next year, it should be very exciting. Thank you, guys. Mm-hmm. Have a great evening, and I'll catch you all later.
Thank you, Rick. And you know what? I remember Gene Fournette called me up and asked me for some comments about an article about, season expectations and, what mine were. And I told Gene at that point, I said, this may be one of the most eagerly anticipated seasons that I've ever approached. And he kind of got, interested in that comment. And I said, hey, look, I said, think about this. I mean, you could have two rookie tackles playing, significant contributions from a lot of these other guys. And what I've seen so far in training camp, they all look really good.
Mm-hmm.
And he kind of took it as as kind of a company line statement. And
media stinks.
Team media is kind of the attitude that he took. Which kind of pissed me off.
I can imagine that it did.
I hate the media.
That's two shots at you.
I'm not going to say anything just because, I'm employed by the team, which I'm not. It's by the radio station and television station.
You're not media?
It was my honest opinion about this season. I have not swayed from that. Every week I can't wait for Sunday, I can't wait for Monday to watch all of these young players and see how they're developing. And you know what? They're looking pretty good.
Here's even better news. Eugene Monroe and Evan Britton are doing well. Knighton and Derek Cox, when you consider where they were selected and the value that's been returned, probably represent the best 1-2 punch in the draft.
Right.
Bang, bang. I mean, obviously, because they were drafted one after the other.
Right.
But even beyond that, I mean, in terms of two players on one team from the draft, those guys are as good as anybody. Let's see, who's had a good 1-2 punch in the draft? Stafford and Lewis Delmas in Detroit. I'll take Knighton and Cox.
Right.
I mean, it's the best 1-2 punch I can find in the draft.
Especially for the money.
How about Mike Thomas, the fourth round, the catch he made?
Absolutely. He has changed the face of the offense because he has given them another dimension.
Well, to me, that's a little much. What's changed the offense has been the emergence of Mike Walker.
Okay.
Without a doubt.
Okay.
His emergence, the steadiness of Torrey Holt, And I think also at times the play of David Garrard has gotten this offense to where it's at. There's no doubt that, that Mike has helped. But I don't think he's changed the offense. But I'm looking forward to him adding to that offense even more. And the tight end, Zach Miller. I mean, those two guys, I'm really excited about watching them develop in this offense because when these guys start to get better, look out.
Okay, I was going to go to Zach Miller, but you're missing one. Yeah, you're going to see more from Zach Miller. But there's one more. A very large birdie, a really big birdie, chirped in my ear this week that the last pick, Tyquan Underwood, has looked very, very good in practice. This is 4.29 speed. This is rare speed in a tall guy. And I know he needs to get bigger and, you know, thicker and all that kind of stuff. But if you got a guy who can really stretch the field long ways.
Someone called Jack Show last night and brought that up based on your comment in Ask Vic. And he said, hold on a sec. Jarrett Dillard is still ahead of him. And we haven't even seen Jarrett Dillard's best stuff.
I'm excited for next year.
I understand that.
No, but, I'm just bringing another name.
But these are in addition to the first five guys that we mentioned, you know, from Monroe through Thomas.
Let's take a break. News is coming up at the top of the hour. Do not forget that we will keep you abreast of the Summer Thompson situation here on News Talk Radio WOKV. Jaguars this week continues after this quick timeout.
To talk to Brian, Jeff, and Vic, dial 355-NFL1 or 1-800-355-NFL1. Now, back to Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna on News Talk Radio WOKV.
We're rolling along towards the top of the hour. Sexton, Loggeman, Ketchman, Fortunato with you for Jaguars This Week. We're here every Wednesday night, and of course, we will step aside should any news merit it. And of course, this evening, the news pros over at WOKV are following the Summer Thompson story, and we'll update you with the latest at the very top of the hour. Until that moment, though, we'll grab some more callers, and we go to the west side of town where Jim is standing by. And Jim, we welcome you to the show.
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I wanted to ask Jeff about Ryan Ewell, how he's been playing in place of Justin Durant and the play of the linebackers in general.
He's been playing okay. You know, the one thing that they did last week, which I don't want to say surprised me, but we saw, was they had Ewell in the starting lineup, but then they actually rotated Russell Allen into that spot. And I think they are very happy. That was one guy we haven't mentioned yet, Russell Allen. They like the way he's playing. He's obviously earned some reps in that role in which, you know, when you lose a starter, you got to have a guy come in. Brian Ewell does a little bit better in space.
Have you ever talked to Russell Allen?
I have not.
He's a really good guy. Go ahead with the story. He's a really good guy.
He's a good football player.
That's good because he's a really good
guy. He's a good football player on special teams, and he has certainly earned some reps on defense. And he's fun to watch. So, David, I mean, it's Jim, right?
Yeah, Jim.
Right.
Jim, Ewell's been okay, but you know what? He's not a Justin Durant.
Oh no!
You know, Justin Durant runs as good as any linebacker in the league, and they need to have him back out there.
Okay.
Appreciate it.
Oh, by the way, news on Rasheem Mathis. You know, he's got some kind of finger injury, so we were given a report today. It's really not that bad. It'll be updated next week.
Okay.
Bye week, not required to give injury information.
Yeah. Translation? Yeah, you ain't getting nothing.
355-NFL1. Let's grab John, who joins us from Keystone Heights. Hello, John. Welcome to the show.
Hey, how you doing, guys?
Good.
Hey, I know all the callers and fans, thoughts and prayers are with the Thompson family.
Yeah.
And for one thing, Vic, your show gets better and better every week.
Yeah.
Really like it.
You like that ticket show, huh?
Yeah.
Ain't going to be any more of those.
Yeah. Jeff.
A lot of people are glad about that.
On the defense, what I'm wondering is what I see is we still aren't getting the pressure on the quarterback, and I think that's kind of our problem. Is there a fix, or do we need to get a fix?
You know what I envision the pass rush as is kind of a life preserver. You know, you're in the pool, and you really need it, but you know what you better do? keep on treading water.
Better swim.
Because it's not coming. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, that's the unfortunate reality of this year for this football team. Can they get a little better? Sure. Are they going to improve it in 1 year? It's not happening.
You know who's going to improve the pass rush, don't
because,
you?
Because here's – and Vic, you know this. Brian knows this. 3-4 defense. Who are the key players to stop the run? Number one, nose tackle. Mm-hmm. Number two, those big defensive ends to frickin' take guys up, jack them up, and make plays. Mm-hmm. Okay, where does the pass rush come from in a 3-4?
Linebackers.
Kevin Green, Greg Lloyd, you know, mm-hmm. those type of players. And there ain't one on this roster right now. But I'm anxiously awaiting to see what they do on the defense when Justin Durant comes back.
Okay.
Because I think we saw a little flash of what we're going to see in Seattle, and I'll explain in a minute.
On this week a year ago, which was a bye week too,
yes,
the Jaguars were 29th in the league in sacks per pass play. A year later, they are, at the same time, they are 32nd, last in the league in sacks per pass play. Now, what did they do? Who did they draft? Who did they sign in free agency between last year and this year to improve the pass rush? What did they do in the last year to improve the pass rush?
In the last year?
Mm-hmm. You're talking post-Groves.
What did they do?
In the last one-year period.
Yeah, in the last one-year period to improve the pass rush.
Nothing.
Then why would you expect it to be better? Because they switched to the 3-4. Oh, that's all you got to do is you play the 3-4, and the sacks just keep on. No. You could play 3-4, 2-8, 9-6. You could play anything you want. You got to have the personnel. They don't have the linebackers to get the sacks, as Jeff said, and they don't have the defensive ends to play the 4-3.
Now, the one thing, though, that I, you know, obviously I think one of the things they're expecting or hoping for is that Derek Harvey, Quentin Groves would develop into pass rushers, and it hasn't quite happened yet. But when Justin Durant comes back, we saw a little bit of it in Seattle because Darryl Smith moved to outside linebacker to rush the passer. Mm-hmm. When Justin Durant comes back, I would not be surprised if we see Darryl Smith make the move to the outside linebacker position mm-hmm. to start bringing some heat. Because he is
moving to
best
where Harvey
rusher.
Is.
Or where Harvey is or where Clint Ingram is or getting in that mix somehow, and then you let Brian Iwu and Russell Allen play more than
okay,
middle.
So you're saying Harvey would then go to a down and hand on the ground end position.
No, I think Darryl just works into that mix. In other words, Darryl can play middle on first down, and then if it's a second and long, when they bring guys in, Clint Ingram comes out, Darryl goes to outside, and then Derek Harvey would stay as an outside rusher as well.
We need news. I'll just say, I think Gene Smith is the only guy who can improve the pass rush.
It's just going to take time. They have to draft. That's the way it's going to be done. You can't do it all in 1 year.
We'll leave you with that. News is next, the latest on Summer Thompson.
To talk to Brian, Jeff, and Vic, dial 355-NFL-1 or 1-800-355-NFL-1. Now, back to Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna on News Talk Radio WOKV.
Welcome back. Hour number two now of Jaguars This Week on News Talk Radio WOKV. Brian Sexton, Jeff Loggeman, Vic Ketchman, and Joe Fortunato are here. You can be as well through the magic of the telephone. 355-NFL-1, 355-6351. Bye week for the Jaguars and their next opponent, the Titans. We'll talk a lot about that next week. Anything in particular that you want to go with, or should we go to the phones?
Go to the phones.
All right, here we go. Right out of the gate, David is in St. Augustine Beach. Hello, David.
Good evening, gentlemen. Thanks for taking my call. I got to tell you, I really love your guys, the three-year dynamic on the show. It's definitely the most entertaining radio show, and, you know, I look forward to it every Wednesday. It's very good. The question that I have, assuming Rasheen does miss any time, what would... You know, I don't want to say player personnel because there's not going to be any roster moves. But in terms of who's actually on the field, how would they juggle that? You know, I know Reggie Nelson has been playing some nickel, you know, and I guess that would be a little bit of a stretch. But who effectively would come in for him? You know, would Derek Cox play the number one guy or would they stay left or right? And I'll take it off the air. Thanks, guys.
Brackenridge, right?
Yeah, Brackenridge would be the first guy in. Reggie's role is as a corner, and I don't know if you'd really say it's corner, but he does play some man against wide receivers, is when they play nickel, when they go to their nickel package, and then he'll match up against a wide receiver, much like he did the last couple weeks. But I don't see them taking Reggie Nelson and saying, hey, okay, let's let you take over for Rasheen and play corner. That might be too much to ask of Reggie Nelson. They've got Reggie in a real defined role, and I think they want to keep him in that defined role so he can improve in that defined role.
I think Rasheen's challenge is going to be in tackling. This is, you know, he's got some kind of a finger injury. It's not as though we're trying to get some kind of determination on whether or not it's going to require surgery, if there's going to be a surgical procedure, and that's not going to be divulged to us. Clearly, that information, whatever information is on this, is not going to be divulged until Coach Del Rio has to divulge it, which is next Wednesday, which is at 4 o'clock, which is pretty much the way any coach in the league would handle this. But we have to assume that there is an injury there of some significance, which means that that hand's going to be wrapped up pretty good. He's going to be wearing a mitten, so to speak.
Or club, you know, to protect the fingers.
Bong, whatever you want to call it. He used to call it a bong, you know, I mean, a big ball in a guy's hand. I don't think it's going to make him a better tackler. That's what they used to call it. I know you've got some kind of...
You went to Kent State back in the day now.
Yeah, I know that
stuff, too.
They
called something else that.
Yeah.
You know what a bong is.
And you know what I'm talking about there,
Yeah,
Catchman.
I know. Kind of has a straw coming out of it.
355.
Never did that stuff.
NFL 1. 355-6351. Leopold joins us from the beach. Hello, Leopold.
Hey, Vic, Brian and Jeff.
Hello, Leopold.
Hey, how you doing? I got a comment and a quick question. My comment is about the Jaguars offense. I agree with you on everything you were saying about the talent on the offensive side of the ball. You can tell how good the offense is as of right now when Dillard and Underwood, who I think are good receivers, can't even get on the field.
Yeah.
Because the talent on the offensive side of the ball is outstanding. But my question is for Jeff.
Mm-hmm.
Why isn't Dirk Cutter utilizing Zach Miller more? And what I mean by that is he runs a 4-5.
Mm-hmm.
I don't understand why they won't line him up at wide receiver and run him down the seam to stretch the safety so they won't double-team Mike Sims-Walker.
I think the reason for that is kind of twofold. For one, he's a young player. He's making a position switch. The second reason is that he came out of the preseason with a pretty significant injured knee. And we thought we were going to really see some packages for him, and we've seen some plays for him. But I thought we would start to see some more packages. But Leopold, if you go back to the game in Seattle, and I don't know if you guys remember this, but he took a real good shot on his knee in Seattle and had to limp back off of the field. Now, he played this past week.
Had one catch for 14 yards.
Yes, and it was a real nice little play. But I wonder, Leopold, for one, he's a young player, and number two, that knee, working his way back into the lineup, and then also it appears that he took a pretty good shot to that knee in Seattle. Maybe that's kind of slowed it up. But there is, I don't think there's any question that Zach Miller at some point, I think that they expect Dallas Clark type things from him.
Yeah.
Because, you know, hey, look, you know, when a guy has 50 rushing touchdowns as a senior, I don't care if he's playing in Little League. That's a pretty good number.
He's bigger and faster than Dillard, just to give you an idea. For a tight end, H-back, whatever you want to call him, he's bigger and faster than Dillard, who's a wide receiver.
You know, coaches are very cautious. You know, and then just like what Dirk Cutter had said in our pregame interview a few weeks ago, he said, you know, coaches like to deal with things that they know.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what are rookies? You know, look how long it took them to find a package for Mike Thomas. You know, and I think Mike Thomas was ready to go, you know, pretty much early on in the season, and it didn't happen until all of a sudden we saw that one game in Houston to where he was a reverse guy and a decoy guy. But give it time. Give it time.
I remember writing in training camp that it would have to be the offense that would have to carry this team. And I got it right. the talent on this team is clearly tilted toward the offensive side of the ball. You have a good veteran quarterback on this team. I'm not putting him in the top 10 of the league, but he is a good, stable, steady veteran quarterback who made a terrible mistake on Sunday and then rectified it, redeemed himself by getting it done at crunch time. And that may be the most positive thing of the whole first six games, that you had a guy who, when it looked like the season, looked like this whole thing was going to crash after that Leonard Little interception. I mean, it was just a sinking feeling for everybody. And he brought him right down the field. That's just a giant positive. But you've got a completely built receiving core, and it's getting better and better. You've got a rebuilt offensive line, and it's getting better and better. You've got a good, steady quarterback, and you've got a star running back. And this offense right now is number 11 in the league. They got a couple.
Pretty good.
They got a couple softies coming up here. Hey, this could turn into a top 10 offense.
It's pretty good right now. I mean, really.
Yep.
But this is not a one man offense. I don't think any team in the league can have a one man offense. Does any of them really have that? I mean, the Tennessee Titans.
Manning is as close as you get.
Oh, there's no doubt.
Yeah, two man offense. Him and Reggie went. Well, Dallas
Clark. Dallas Clark. And you know, Dye ain't bad either. But I mean, Dye gets all his magic.
No, to answer your question, no. There are no one man offenses.
The only one man offenses that I remember in recent memory is probably the Tennessee Titans from last year with Chris Johnson. But Kerry Collins was lights out.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Yeah. Gotta have a lot of weapons.
Yep.
Real quick, on the other side of the ball, we were talking about Rasheen Mathis and what this team would do without Rasheen Mathis and how they would adjust. I wanted to ask you, watch the tape, Derek Cox, how has he progressed just from your film study?
He's getting better every week. In the first scoring drive this past week against the Rams, he was a little soft. But the one thing that I like about Derek Cox is that sometimes he doesn't quite know how good he is. You know what I mean? As far as he's not quite ready to I don't want to say gamble, but to be aggressive. So sometimes he'd rather make the tackle as opposed to getting beat. But he's really good. I mean, he's really good.
Well, you cited the play he made on Tim Carter in the fourth quarter.
He's not Pro Bowl good. You know, I'm not saying he's that this year. But he certainly has a lot of talent, and I like him because he's got a physical element to his game.
Let's take a break. More to come of Jaguars this week on News Talk Radio, WOKV. Depend on it.
To talk to Brian, Jeff, and Vic, dial 355-NFL1 or 1-800-355-NFL1. Now back to Jaguars this week, presented by Aetna on News Talk Radio, WOKV.
Rolling right along, news at the bottom of the hour. We will, of course, get you caught up to date on everything relative to the Summer Thompson situation. That's coming up in about 12 minutes. Brian Sexton, Jeff Loggeman, Vic Ketchman, Joe Fortunato. We go to Orlando, where Steven is standing by. Hello, Steven.
Hi, guys. How are you?
Good, Steven.
I was wondering if any of you three had seen the ESPN documentary that was on last week about the Baltimore Colts marching band.
I heard about it. I didn't see it. I will see it at some time. I've gotten literally hundreds, I'm going to say a couple hundred, emails from people who were really taken by it, really touched by it, and wanted to comment on it and ask Vic. I ran a couple of those.
Well, I thought it was very good, and what I got from watching it is that I'm unbelievably proud, and I think Jacksonville is incredibly lucky to have a man like Wayne Weaver as their owner. When I'm watching this documentary and you see someone like Robert Irsay and you're like, I wouldn't want him as my owner. And I was wondering what your impression of him at that time was.
Well, first of all, Jimmy Irsay, his son, who is the new patriarch of the Indianapolis Colts, is a really good guy. It's hard to believe that a really good guy like Jimmy Irsay would fall from that tree because his old man was a nutcase. And he was what he did to the city of Baltimore by tearing their heart out and pulling out in those Mayflowers in the middle of the night is heartless. And it was so undeserved. Baltimore was the standard by which franchises were judged in the 60s. They were just a five-star NFL franchise, them and the Green Bay Packers. The reason this franchise is in Jacksonville and not Baltimore is because Jack Kent Cook, who then owned the Washington Redskins, was alive at the time that the call was made, and he didn't want another franchise within 30 miles of his. And of course,
which at the time they were moving out of RFK
into Landover, Maryland.
That's right.
Up the road, so he was actually going to get closer. What's Landover, 20 miles from Baltimore?
A little bit more. Well, maybe it's Crow Flies.
Okay, so let's say 25, 30 miles. Imagine that. The Washington Redskins and the Baltimore Ravens, two NFL franchises, are closer, are nearer to each other than Jacksonville and St. Augustine. Now, think of that, folks. All right, now that's a fact there. In fact, going from Baltimore... Washington to Baltimore is like going from here to Ponte Vedra, to Palm Valley, where I live.
Right.
All right, certainly. And Jack Kent Cook didn't want it, and that's why Baltimore was snubbed. Baltimore really deserved a franchise because theirs was stolen from them just as they would then steal Cleveland's. You know,
it's what happened.
It's what happened. I mean, right on the old tarmac, they took the Cleveland Browns. Because they had it done to them, we're lucky. We're lucky to have a team here, and fortunately, Baltimore got a team back. And you know they've never had a blackout.
Nope.
The Ravens have never had anything. They've never played anything but sellout crowds.
You know what's amazing? What has impressed me about playing in Baltimore, which we've done what, twice?
Yeah, Jaguars.
Well, a lot more than that.
As far as me and you calling games, you covering games.
Oh, a lot more than twice. The Jaguars were there when they were in the Central.
Yeah, but I'm talking about when from this perspective.
Right.
I mean, I was there as a player.
Yeah.
But it's amazing to me how such a relatively young franchise, even though it was a former NFL city, the passion that the fans have for that team and that city.
Oh,
it's amazing.
Great football town. I covered a game there in, I think it was either 82, it was 83. And that would have been their last season in Baltimore. And it was some kind of a promotion, and they gave all the media people attending that game little satchels, briefcase kind of things that were in Colts blue, and then on the outside it says Baltimore Colts, and I still have it. I still have it stowed away somewhere under the steps. Baltimore Colts. To think that the Colts would ever bear a name other than Baltimore is sacrilege. I mean, when you grew up with Johnny Unitas and Lenny Moore and Art Donovan and Alan Ameche and Ray Berry and Jimmy Orr and Gino Marchetti, to think that the Colts would ever be anything other than the Baltimore Colts is sacrilege. And Robert Irsay did it.
You know, I can remember the first time we ever played the Colts in Indianapolis. I kept calling them on the air, subconsciously, the Baltimore Colts, the Baltimore Colts, the Baltimore Colts. Finally, somebody said to me, do you realize you keep calling them the Baltimore Colts? I said, I didn't even realize it.
The Colts not being the Baltimore Colts is every bit akin to the Packers not being the Green Bay Packers. And I mean that. I absolutely mean that. It was just when it happened, and I covered a game the following season in Indianapolis, their first year, Colts' first year in Indianapolis, and I couldn't believe that I was writing about a team called the Indianapolis Colts.
You know, but if you look at the history of this game, that was right about the time. Was it Norm Brayman was talking about taking the Eagles and moving them to Phoenix? I mean, that was the very first tipping point. And I know that the Raiders had already moved from Oakland to L.A., but now you had some major market Eastern franchises that were talking about.
Well, it was stadium hostage. It was, you know, holding cities hostage to get new stadiums. It wasn't about attendance, lack of attendance. It was about stadiums. And the Hoosier Dome was sitting there empty, so they had a place to which they could run. But how do you do that to a fan base that had been that loyal? I don't care. I know it's about the money and everything else, but the guy was a devil.
Do you know that the Baltimore Ravens franchise right now and their fans, they're gaining by the minute.
Oh, it is an absolute standard.
It's one of the healthiest franchises in the NFL.
It's a shining light. It is a beacon.
And with that debacle just to the south, they're getting more fans by the day.
How about that? How about that? That's a great analogy.
But, you know, if you want to look at the health of that franchise, look at the Giants. Look at the Cowboys and the debt that they're taking on to open these brand new palaces.
What was the first thing? Go ahead, I'm sorry.
My point is that they've got a stadium that does not cause them an extreme amount of trouble debt-wise. They don't carry a huge debt service on it. As you mentioned, they have fans that are there buying tickets and selling out every game. They've got a good young coach and a good young quarterback. I mean, that's a franchise that is as healthy as any in the game.
What was the first thing Art Modell did when he started playing games, and changed the name to the Ravens and started playing games in Baltimore? What was the first thing he did? One of the first things.
Started bringing back some of the old Colt players.
Parked Johnny Unitas on the sideline.
Yeah.
Remember that?
Yeah.
What statue is outside
Johnny
Ravens?
Unitas.
Statue of Johnny Unitas. And what did Johnny Unitas tell the Indianapolis Colts?
He do not want his number. Does not want his
number. Get my name out of your record book. Get my name out of your media guide. I didn't play in Indianapolis. I played in Baltimore.
It's a great young franchise.
No, it is. It is. And I would have to say that, first of all, their stadium is top-notch. Fans are top-notch.
Yep.
Can you think of a better?
It's a great trip.
You know, situation in the league?
As good as it gets.
You know, Baltimore is a revitalized downtown. You know, they've got it going on.
355-NFL-1. 355-6351. Hey, Joe, how are the Phillies going to do tonight?
Wow. They have to win.
They don't have to win.
They have to win.
They got plenty of breathing room.
I had ESPN on here in the studio, and I could just see he's looking, you know, where's the remote? Where's the remote? Looking at me.
It's
looking
about 8 o'clock. You're okay.
You know, Phillies Yankees would be a
TV ratings would be through the roof.
It would be star-studded.
Because you're not going to get any ratings from the West Coast.
Yeah, but nothing would beat Dodgers Yankees just for the whole Joe Torre thing and the whole Brooklyn thing. That would be the perfect.
Oh, you're right. No, you're right. You're right. You know, you're right. I hadn't thought about the name. I thought about was just thinking in terms of geography. But you're right.
Be the train series.
Yeah, subway series.
This will be the I-95.
No. There's no subway.
Well, the Dodgers Yankees.
Yeah, that's
was the subway series.
No, subway series is Yankees Mets.
Which happened a couple of years ago.
Yeah, but I'm saying the Dodgers have played the Yankees in the World Series before,
yes,
right? When
they were
in Brooklyn,
absolutely.
Right?
Yes, yes.
Do you know when the Dodger fans found out they were the team was moving to Los Angeles?
When Vito Stellino was seen on top of some building with binoculars looking for the vans.
That's Baltimore. in the middle of the ninth inning. Of the final game of the season at Ebbets Field, the announcer read a prepared statement. Thank you, fans, for your patronage this year. Next year, the Dodgers will be playing in Los Angeles.
And how did they react?
There was a stunned silence.
How do you react to that?
There was a stunned silence. No, this is the truth. This is the true story. The announcer read, the PA guy read a prepared statement before the home half of the ninth inning. And he just said, yeah, you know, see ya, Saps. It was stunned silence, and some people, they thought it was a joke. There was some giggling from what I've read, and then there was just, what?
We're due for news here at the bottom of the hour. We'll take it now. Come back with 30 more minutes of Jaguars This Week on News Talk Radio WOKV. Depend on it.
To talk to Brian, Jeff, and Vic, dial 355-NFL-1 or 1-800-355-NFL-1. Now, back to Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna on News Talk Radio WOKV.
Welcome back. Final half hour of Jaguars This Week. You can join us, 355-NFL-1. And we'll go to upstate New York, where Dan is standing by. First call to the final half hour. Hello, Dan.
Hey, Brian. How's it going?
Good.
Hey, just had a question for Vic. I've been a fan since like 95 or 96, and I was just wondering, say Gene Smith was the GM last year. Do you think that we would have targeted Derek Harvey at all?
If Gene Smith had been the GM last year, first of all, you wouldn't have signed. You wouldn't have spent $25 million on used up old players. And I'm talking about Jerry Porter, Drayton Florence, those two primarily. Now, as far as Derek Harvey is concerned, you know, I'd just be guessing. I don't know where Gene
stands
on
that
one.
I wouldn't say targeted, but he certainly would have been on the radar at the picks that they had.
You know what?
Because Gene would not trade away that many picks for one pick.
Yeah, you just took what I was going to say. I'm now prepared to say no. He wouldn't have done what he did, because I can remember having conversation with him since then, and he was very dismayed that they lost so many picks. And the way this conversation came about was, some of these guys, they signed off practice squads. One in particular, Kennard Cox,
yes,
was a guy they wanted to draft in like the sixth round, but didn't have a pick to do it. And, you know, and the conversation was about being disappointed at not being able to execute all these scouting reports that they had done, all these guys they had targeted. And Kennard Cox is just an example of one of them. You know, you are the head of college scouting. This is, you know, this is your department, and you've got, you know, these walls full of names and numbers and reports, and you've got them all ranked, and you've got 11 picks going in, and you come out with five? I mean, that is just such a bummer. If you're a college scouting guy and you've turned 11 picks into five, you just go home feeling like crap.
Well, and I don't want Dan or anybody else to get the wrong idea and think that Gene Smith would not have drafted Derek Harvey.
Yeah, I don't know.
You know, we don't know that, but I'm certainly there would have been consideration given where they were at to begin with.
He wouldn't have traded all those picks.
He would not have traded all of the picks because the draft is what it is.
Maybe he could have, I don't know, maybe he would have moved up to 15 and still got him. I don't know. But he would not have traded all those picks. That's just not Gene. I mean, you can see it. I mean, he's said it over and over. He's a draft guy. The idea of trading away picks is just not him.
Seems to make sense that Harvey would fit better if they had stayed put and gotten him there. You know, they were 26.
Yeah.
That's a better slot for him right now. Everyone talks about how well he's playing against the run, but they didn't draft him to
Vic,
play the
that's
run.
Why every time when we get to talking about the draft, okay, when we hit that little spot, you know, and I know you love the draft.
Yeah.
And every year you always seem to have this line of demarcation. It's a 10-player draft. It's an 18-player draft.
Mm-hmm.
And then the talent just changes.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-uh.
No, it doesn't. You're
doesn't.
Right. No.
It doesn't. So to take that information, throw it out the window, because you know what? If you go back and you look at all the drafts, there really is no defined line in that draft of talent.
No, you're right. You're right. Although I can tell you this, Jeff, that you can go back and create get evidence to support the other. For instance, last year there were eight tackles taken in the first round. Eight. Do you know how many were taken in the second round? Zero. So if you wanted a tackle, you better get him early because they were going to be gone.
No, I understand position-wise, maybe.
Yeah.
But I'm talking about talent.
Oh, no, you might go through the premier players, but there's more than 10 players
in the that have talent.
Tom Brady was a sixth round pick. Terrell Davis was a sixth round pick. Lots of good football players have come from the lower ranks.
Well, look at the guys they're playing with now. Mike Thomas was a fourth round pick. Jarrett Dillard a fifth round pick.
David Garrard was a fourth or a fifth?
Fourth.
Rasheen was a second.
Sure.
You know, so. I'm not a believer in it. Give me all the late first round picks. You know, back in the day, everybody's like, God, I want a top 10 pick. I want a top 5 pick.
is it really that much better?
Here you go, Jeff. Players, not plays, and picks, not players.
Say that again for those that are slow like me.
Players, not plays, and picks, not players.
Yeah. I got you.
355 NFL. We can't explain the Vickisms.
But you get them.
No, we get been around you long enough.
Sometimes.
Sometimes.
Not all the time.
Not all the time.
Got any more in there? Bi-week Vickisms?
No. I'm sure there's got to be something from a bye week.
How much golf are you going to play this weekend?
I kind of shut it down.
Do you really?
Yeah, I'll go to the range. And
I mean, it's going
to
be beautiful.
Yeah, I know. But,
You going to check out of golf?
Mm-hmm.
Or check out of football for the weekend? You know, put it away too?
Oh, no. I'll be nuts. On Saturday, I'll do the same stupid thing I do every Saturday. I'll go out and do the yard work. And then come in and sit down at noon. Okay, I'm going to watch a little football and rest. Midnight, I'm still watching. I'm sick, you know.
And every Sunday you come in and say, did you see that yesterday?
You know, and
I never happened.
And we're all
going,
game. See what?
Because you saw it all.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's stupid. Why?
But you're never happy with it.
Well, it's, no.
I mean, really, you come in about the college game on Sunday, and you watch it all day, but you never have anything complimentary to say about it.
No. Well, I was hot last week.
Oh, I know.
Oh, I was hot.
What do you mean you were hot?
Well, I mean, I don't want this to come out the wrong way. It's just I have invested my entire freaking day into this. My hind end is flat, all right, from watching TV. It's my own fault, but I'm watching. And the Arkansas-Florida game was compelling. I mean, this is good stuff. Okay. I'm watching, and get down at the end, and the officials take over.
Well, you didn't see the Georgia LSU game?
I saw the celebration thing, which is AJ Green.
That was terrible then.
Yeah, I didn't like that either. But, you know, I watched a couple weeks ago Notre Dame and Washington. They jobbed them something awful, just awful what they did
with the Huskies,
to Washington.
You know, when you watch those college games, okay, and then did you guys watch the baseball game last night?
I did not see it.
No, I didn't see that part of it. I know all
Which
about
was
it.
Terrible.
Well, hey,
all right, Joe, come on, turn your mic on.
Pull your microphone on here.
This was interesting to me because you know what, the SEC things that have been going on the last couple weeks, and then last night, some of the things that we've seen in baseball, which happened earlier in the playoffs.
Yeah.
And then you watch the special that was on ESPN last night about the USFL, which was the first to have the use of instant replay.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm sitting there going, boy, thank goodness the NFL tries to get it right.
Well, let me say this before you get to the baseball thing. Let me say this about the recent SEC. Now, the LSU-Florida game, you're probably talking about the Florida receiver.
No, I was talking about the LSU-Georgia game.
Okay. The LSU-Florida game, the Florida receiver pulls the shirt down, holds the defender on the, which turned out to be the game-winning touchdown pass or the only touchdown play of the game. Clearly pass interference. I don't have a problem with this because I don't mind officials not calling what they don't see.
Yeah.
All right? I got no problem with that. Hey, I didn't see it because you're supposed to call them as you see them. But how can you call how can you say you saw something if it didn't happen? That's the one I have trouble with, you see? That's the one. They call a penalty on a guy making a block. You know what I'm talking about?
I know exactly what you're talking about.
How could you have seen that and not have seen that they were two players colliding?
Right. That was when the defender turned up the field to go chase.
Hey, that's the difference between a 42-yard field goal and an extra point, right, essentially. That's a big difference. And I got up off the couch and I said to myself, I spent over three hours watching this game, and then they pulled this kind of crap at the end. And I got hot.
How long did it take you to go find a different game?
I went up to the bathroom for a half an hour, sat down and read a little bit, right back downstairs and turned on another game. Virginia Tech and Georgia Tech.
Did you like that one better?
Yeah, but Virginia Tech at the end, I mean, it's just, you know, like a matador. Ole! I mean, they just let them run right down the field.
Let's take a break. We got one more segment to this crazy radio show, and we'll bring it to you on News Talk Radio WOKV. Depend on it.
To talk to Brian, Jeff, and Vic, dial 355-NFL1 or 1-800-355-NFL1. Now, back to Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna on News Talk Radio WOKV.
Oh, welcome back to Jaguars This Week. I guess it's my turn. We're talking baseball now? Was it?
That was smooth.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Thanks, pal. Thanks a lot.
Sounded like Monday.
Tim McClellan, third base umpire last night.
Yeah, give us the story on the baseball.
In the Yankees-Angels game. You got guys at second and third, okay? Catcher ends up with the ball, catches the guy coming between third and home.
Mm-hmm.
Runs him back to third. Naturally, when you get a guy in a rundown, if you know baseball, the thing to do if you're on second is to go to third.
Right.
Because no matter what happens,
somebody's
going to be on third.
Right.
So he does the right thing, the guy on second, going to third.
Mm-hmm.
However, when he gets there about the same time that the guy on third gets back to third.
That's okay. Just hold your ground.
Who never touches the bag. He goes into foul territory and standing there. Well, the catcher tags him. Now, the ump is standing right there, this guy McClellan. He tags him, turns around, and also tags the guy coming from second base who's also not on the bag.
Well, then it's, yeah, I mean, it's out, out. Play.
It's two for one.
Right. Yeah.
Ump said, no, sorry. No, this guy was on. I didn't see it. The guy was on.
He had another mess up last night besides the tag up after the deep fly ball?
That same guy. I was going to tell you that other thing. Yeah, when the Swisher was at
that
bat,
was
his
both,
fly
both
ball,
of that guy
same
last
guy,
night?
Looking at the outfield, is kind of peripherally checking the guy
on third. Yeah.
Well, the guy on third kind of makes a movement to run, but his foot's still on the bag.
Yeah, I saw
clearly
that.
Makes the,
but
the outfield
the rundown,
clearly
when,
makes the catch.
When did the rundown happen?
After that.
Oh, after that in last night's game?
Yeah, yeah. And then there was a play at second base, not involving him, but they clearly had the guy picked off second base.
He was out by 10 inches. I saw that.
His hand was at least a glove length.
It was one of the greatest pickoff throws I've ever seen.
Had him dead. They call him safe. Said the guy did not tag. The guy didn't tag up. Called him out. That lost a run. And then the catcher makes two outs at third base. Doesn't get either one of them.
I thought McClellan's call was a makeup call for the incorrect one at second base because they were showing that on replay a ton. You know, so I didn't know he had another mess up. I couldn't stay up.
There were three in that game. And it's enough to make you think, okay, maybe the umpires want instant replay and they're screwing this stuff up on purpose.
I don't know.
That's how blatant it was.
Well,
why would you not want to have instant replay in baseball?
Because the game is
baseball's tradition about no change. Baseball has always been and always will be about no change.
See, I don't
buy 90 feet between bases and 60 feet, 6 inches.
If that was true, we would have never had a designated hitter.
But shouldn't
you don't have it in one league.
Shouldn't it be about getting it right? I mean,
yes.
Really? Shouldn't it be about getting it right?
Baseball's about tradition.
And baseball takes forever.
Above all.
So tradition is more important than getting it
right. Yes, yes.
See, I don't agree with that.
They want a standard. Babe Ruth did it this way. And if you're going to judge yourself against Babe Ruth, you have to do it under the same circumstances. You see, in football, we've got new rules. For instance, Mike Sims-Walker, what's he got, 30 catches?
28.
Okay. Mike Sims-Walker is like within 20, 30 catches of the best year Lynn Swann and Paul Warfield ever had. It was a different game.
Yeah, but we understand that.
Well,
but how would
do we really?
How would instant replay make the game different in baseball?
It would make it a lot longer.
Oh boy! Oh, yeah. It'd be 5-hour games every week.
Yeah, I know, but there's ways to make it move faster.
I didn't realize there's already a time limit. You have to throw a pitch within a. I don't know who keeps this time, but you cannot take forever between
pitches. No. There's no time limit. It's discretionary. If the umpire feels that you're stalling, He can warn you. He can give you the point at you.
We're over here talking baseball, and Brian's packing up.
Yeah,
because we're talking. He's Manny Ramirez. You know what Manny Ramirez did the other night? They took him out of the game.
What?
They took him out of the game for defensive purposes.
Took a shower.
went right to the showers, was in the showers while they lost.
they are such,
like, come on,
baseball
man.
Players are unbelievable. Trust me, I was one. I mean, I know about these guys. They are obtuse.
He blows
they
it off like it's nothing. Baseball. He goes, well, I'm in the shower. And when I came out, they were turning the TVs off in the locker room.
Hey, Javon Kearse did that in Tennessee.
Listen.
Was inactive, went home.
Let me tell you about your Philadelphia. I don't think this was the Phillies. This may have been a member of the Philadelphia Athletics. A rather famous pitcher was a pyromaniac. All right. I mean, the baseball used to be full of sociopaths. Well, Ty Cobb murdered two guys. He murdered a doorman in Cleveland because he was black. Man, it's a fact. He was just a raging racist. But anyhow, there was a pitcher for either the Philadelphia Athletics or Philadelphia Phillies who was a pyromaniac. Do you know the story?
No.
He heard a fire truck going up the street outside the ballpark, threw down his glove, ran out, and chased the fire truck up the road to see where the fire was. I mean, baseball is notorious for having stupid players.
I can't contribute anything to the baseball conversation.
Yes, you can. You're a Cardinals fan. You know
you are. All
right,
well, let me just bring this up real quick. And Lee's gone, so we don't have him anymore.
Good.
You're talking about replay in baseball?
Yeah.
I will have one thing that drives me crazy about college football is all the replays. They replay every play all the time. They don't have that two-minute rule where they can go and replay it in the booth.
Yeah, but
they
you know what, though?
It just goes on every play.
Yeah, I was amazed.
What they need to do in the NFL is that when officials, and I'm talking quality officials, become senior. In other words, excellent officials, maybe they can't move like they used to. Instead of them going to retirement, move them to the booth. Let them review it without having the whole process of, you know, Jacksonville has challenged the ruling on the field. Let me make this announcement. Now I'm going to go over to the replay monitor. Let me come back. Just let the guy up in the booth do it.
And look. Isn't it supposed to be 90 seconds?
Streamlined.
I'm just going to
because
make...
it's never 90 seconds.
It's never 90 seconds.
No.
College football is the worst. It's fixed. The
easy.
The word is in. Let me tell you. A few years ago, Kansas and Texas.
If it was.
Oh, no, Jeff. No. No, really that was bad. A fixed job.
Yeah, it was really bad.
The Big 12, because it was a BCS. It was $8 million, right?
Yeah, it was.
Yeah. Vince Young threw the pass.
It was a terrible pass. It was way over the intended target.
Mangino said it, and then they fined Mangino, and then he said, oh, I'm sorry, I shouldn't have said that. Yeah. Uh-huh. And then Pitt, West Virginia, a couple years ago, they kept calling back touchdowns because they were trying to get West Virginia in the national title game.
You can make a real case
all right?
for this.
And I've seen, I can't tell you how many situations I've seen this year. I mean, what's going on at Notre Dame? I mean, touchdown Jesus is going to raise his arm. He's going to lower his arms. I mean, that statue is literally going to walk off the roof and walk in that stadium and slap one of those officials for what's going on there. What they did to Washington, they ought to all go to hell.
I didn't see it.
It's just horrible. Horrible. I mean, it was so bad, and it was a Big East crew. Basically, what they were saying is, if we call this for you, will you please join the Big East? And I got to tell you, what I saw Saturday just down the road wasn't much better.
I didn't see all of it.
Is about it for the show this evening, ladies and gentlemen. We hope you enjoy the bye weekend. We'll talk to you next week on Jaguars This Week.
Go Phillies.
Stay tuned to WOKV throughout the evening for updates on the Summer Thompson situation. In fact, news is next.
This has been Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna, on your flagship station for Jaguars football, AM 690 and 106.5 FM. News Talk Radio, WOKV. Depend on it.